Hey, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Greg.
And I'm Penny.
And this is The Extraordinary Cast, a podcast dedicated to the Hulu and Disney Plus series Extraordinary, created by Emma Moran.
In this episode, we're covering Season 1, Episode 6, The Real Powers Are the Friends We Made Along the Way, written by Emma Moran and directed by Nadira Amrani.
Moving on to a summary of the episode, things are icy and awkward between Jen and Carrie after last week's blowout. Jen goes to her free consultation at the Discovery Center and meets Hannah, another 25-year-old without a power. The two bond and drink and bond, until Hannah starts teleporting. Not necessarily in that order. And almost immediately bails on Jen. Carrie gets closer to Jizzlord, who helps her remember the reasons why she's friends with Jen. He comforts her and prods Jen into making conciliatory gestures. And Cash, prodded into action by Carrie, sets out to atone for his vigilante squad and ends up reassembling them. Carrie and Jen start to repair their friendships over an erotic jigsaw. How'd you like this one, Penny?
I love this episode, especially after last week's. It was so nice to see that there might be like actual change ahead in Carrie and Jen's lives.
I think specifically Jen kind of redeemed herself, especially towards the end. Although at a couple points in the middle, there were like, oh yeah, you're still hurt, and therefore you are lashing out. But I was actually felt a little bit vindicated because a couple of the things I mentioned last week came to pass, and I will celebrate at the appropriate time. I enjoyed this too. I had a lot of fun listening to this one. I would say that the introduction of Hannah was a great, maybe foil is not the right word, but a great counter to Carrie. Someone who's just kind of basically just like Jen. She's feeding her own pity and her own anger towards the world. And you put a mirror up to your worst qualities, and then, you know, what happens when you end up feeding those worst parts, and now we're just backing each other up. So,
yeah, definitely, Hannah was an enabler for Jen's sort of most selfish impulses.
Yeah.
But also, I think, a valuable experience for her to see maybe what it's like to be friends with herself.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
Oh, can't count on her, self-centered, you know, a little bit crazy. That's not easy to deal with.
Right. Absolutely. I completely agree. what'd you have for humiliation of the week?
There were several to choose from, as usual, but I have to go with Ade and his arse becoming an NFT and people thinking it was a Banksy and being on the news and that some insurance broker in the Netherlands owns the copyright on his arse. I mean, that's forever.
Yeah.
Like,
that was a pretty,
that's out there on the internet forever. And I mean, I don't know. I guess I wouldn't mind people thinking I was a Banksy, but.
It's a humiliating,
I hate NFTs.
Yeah,
so,
it's a humiliating way to spend 26 hours.
Yeah, it's horrible. He was so quick to forgive Cash. Anyway, we'll get into that. But that's mine. How about yours? What's your humiliation of the week?
I didn't have like that many moments where I was like, oh God, that was humiliating. I would say that like the moment that Cash realizes that Gregor's in his costume.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He's been basically backstabbed by somebody that he recruited. Don't get me wrong. I think Cash deserves everything that he gets, but except for Carrie. That sense of betrayal, more than humiliation. No one got caught really doing anything horrific this episode. You know, if the security guard had walked in while Jen was peeing on the desk, that probably would have been there. You know, if they'd gotten the shit kicked out of them for cutting the ponytail girl's hair off, you know, that probably would have matched. But in general, I didn't find too many, you know, straight up humiliating moments.
Shall we get into our main discussion?
Yeah, absolutely.
Where do you want to start?
I think I want to go back to storylines this week.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I don't want to miss stuff. And there were so many tiny little segments that may not be pulled out. Although, you know, I could absolutely pull Hannah as a point. But I think we'll just cover her along the way.
Yeah.
All right. So the first storyline is, you know what? I'm just going to start with the cold open. Because I thought that the red dot thing, I've been in situations not as extreme as that, but very much a matter of the, well, I bought this and so it's mine and you can't use it. And it's the red onion that Jen eats for breakfast because she actually bought it
out of spite.
Spite is absolutely right. It reminded me of, there were a couple of like, not callbacks, but just references to things that reminded me of other things or from other pop culture. There was a YouTube video of like a 3-year-old boy who was like, look, mommy, it's an apple. No, it's not an apple. It's an onion. No, it is an apple. No, it's not. I'm going to eat the apple. You really shouldn't do. And he bites into the apple and he's just chewing it like, see, it's an apple. And that's what this reminded me of, where, you know, Jen gets past the horribleness of chewing an onion and she just like starts to smile.
Yeah. I mean, spite can really motivate a person to behave in childish ways. I loved the whole red sticker thing. All of us, like you said, have been in situations with a roommate or a sibling where things got petty as fuck, right? Where it was like,
absolutely,
like masking tape down the middle of the room to divide the sides, or, you know, writing your names on things. I had a roommate, my first apartment after college. I lived in this big place with 5 other people. And one of the roommates, whose name I have changed to protect her privacy, I guess had lived with food thieves before, but she wrote her name in Sharpie marker on everything, everything. And she wrote her full name with middle initial. So it was like Cindy J. Potts, Cindy J. Potts, Cindy J. Potts. Like when you open the cabinet, like her name was everywhere.
Wow.
She would write it along the peel of like every banana in the bunch of bananas. It was very intense. And she would leave little notes on things too that were like, these are mine, my yummy bagels, they're for me, not for you. And it was like, wow, okay.
Yeah, she definitely had some trauma in her life that led her to do that.
Something had happened in a prior roommate situation, I think. Horrifyingly, when I moved into my next apartment and I was unpacking, I realized that I had accidentally packed 2 of her cookie sheets and left my own cookie sheets behind.
Oh, boy.
And I was like, she's going to haunt us. Like, but yeah, the pettiness of the roommate fight is a time honored classic, right?
Oh, like, absolutely.
Everyone can identify with that.
Yeah. Everybody has a situation where they don't get along with the person they live with, whether it is somewhere in their life, whether it was their parents, whether it was a brother or a sister, a college, you know, a dorm roommate, someone that you were just sharing an apartment with, you know, in the military, someone that you have to live with. Everybody has some sort of story like that, and which makes it a very easy idea and easy concept, but I really enjoyed the execution
Putting a sticker on every slice of bread was beautiful.
Yeah, that was really funny. You felt like Jen was going to go through the loaf trying to find one that Carrie missed.
Yeah, yeah. I can eat this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ah, brilliant. The red dots. I loved it. And also bickering through Jizzlord. Tell Carrie.
Oh, yeah.
Tell Jen, Jennifer, that. And he's just, like, trying so hard to be, like, nice to everyone.
Well, I think he was just trying to fulfill his role. Like, the last thing that happened was that he, like, spat out whatever was said. You know, tell Carrie that blah, blah, blah. Or, no, tell Jen that whatever. And he just, like, spits it out as fast as possible. He's just like, okay,
yeah,
I did it. I am fulfilling my role in this relationship right now.
Yeah. Oh, such a cutie pie. He didn't have a ton going on this episode. He was just sort of, you know, treading water and supporting the other characters.
He was a great support character. He's still adorable. This week. Yeah.
Yeah.
But specifically Jizzlord, he had the, a couple of the funnier one-off moments where, oh, if you're going to the lab, can you give this to the lab? And he's got the Tupperware full of blood. Oh, my God, what is that? It's blood. Oh, that's a lot.
There's so much of it.
There's so much of it. It took me a long time. And then, oh, you do that thing where they find out who your parents are. Oh, you just spit and send it to the post. Send it through the post. And he's spitting an envelope later. Oh, that was well done. Like, no one explained that to him. No one said, hey, well, let's get a kit together and we'll go do this. Yeah. Because everyone's too busy with themselves.
And then I noticed when he spits in the envelope, first we just see him spitting directly into the envelope. And then, like, a few minutes later, there's just a single stamp in the center of the envelope. There's no address or anything on there. It's just like he's just going to mail his spit.
Just going to mail his spit to someone.
Oh, so sweet of him. He called it a dinner test. He's like, can you have them run a dinner test? Do you mean DNA?
Do you mean
Denier?
Maybe. He was very much like, oh, maybe, perhaps. Very childlike.
Yeah. Oh, God. I worry about him, though, like, losing that much blood and falling asleep repeatedly as he did so.
Yeah.
God help.
So Jen is going off to her consultation. She snaps at Jizzlord because she's upset, and so she's lashing out the person who's actually trying to be nice to her. Which, again, we can all identify with. And so I'll tell you what, if you are going to charge, so getting to the office, if you're going to charge 9,500 pounds for someone who's, give me a damn clipboard. Don't make me try to, you know, bend over on a low table or right on someone else's back. That's a lot of writing to do. Yeah.
It reminded me of the scene in Men in Black where the not giving them a clipboard is part of the Men in Black test.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I was like, oh, maybe Discovery Center is testing Jen to see if she... Maybe it's part of, like, stressing her to, like, make her powers come out or something. Or maybe it's just dumb.
Yeah. Or maybe Denise is a bitch. Funny. Just saying.
Yeah, Denise sucks.
Yeah, Denise, you, like, Denise. She really did, like... She was very friendly when they first walked in, but I guess by the third phone call, making sure that it's still free, she was pretty fed up with Jen. But the sensory thing that that Hannah had going on her back, went, oh, you're 25. Did you just draw a dick? Oh,
yeah.
You're good. and then she gives the dick to Denise.
Oh, it slipped.
It slipped. But, so they, she obviously meets Hannah, who also doesn't have any powers. And so they start talking about their plans for the world. We find out that Hannah has been coming there monthly. We don't know when she started. She has definitely, you know, been there for a while. So then, hey, do we want to go do that somewhere, or do that somewhere more fun, go to the bar. Oh, you know, just, you want a proper drink? I'm trying to get this done. Just a baby pint. Just a half.
Yeah. Just a half.
Because they do serve half pints in London, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Then a half turns into a lot. So now they're just bonding, right? Like drinking and bonding and drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And so they see some other people kind of flaunting their powers, like hair girl. Oh, I can do that too. It's called a wig. very, very much like you mentioned, Hannah is feeding into Jen's insecurities and into her, bitterness towards people who have powers. They go to the bathroom, you know, see pink hair girl who is not pink hair girl, cut off her ponytail. Is that a thing where two girls will go into the same stall? I don't know.
I've seen it. I don't like it. we used to do that in bars, but it was always because there was like a long line, and also you often needed someone to hold the door for you.
Hmm.
Because the door locks would always be broken and it was crowded. So it was just like, it made a certain kind of sense. But it's not my preferred way to go to the bathroom, no.
I just thought it was a small stall for two
yeah.
women to be standing in. And then they take off, you know, so they hear the drunk girl come out like, what the fuck?
Can you imagine?
Yeah, and then they take off in the same way that they took off with Tito in, you know, the episode a couple weeks ago.
Oh, the from the funeral.
Yeah, from the funeral where it's in bad taste to steal a dog from a funeral. But yeah, so they take off, and that's what it reminded me of. So then they go home, and Jen is looking for something that is not. You know, for food in the fridge that is not tagged, and she finds a cheese single and is ambushed by Carrie, or well, her dad, via Carrie. A cheese single at midnight. You're not divorced. So it makes me think that you know, her mom and dad were divorced.
Yeah, before he died. I love that line.
That was a good line. That was a very good line.
She's single at midnight. Come on. You're not recently divorced.
Yeah.
Because that is like one of the saddest snack foods. Like string cheese is even like better. Like that's a snack. But when right. you're going for the single wrapped slice, like all quality and dignity is out the window. They taste like the plastic wrap. You might as well just eat it with the wrapper on.
I cannot stand American cheese. I cannot stand like processed.
Oh, it's vile.
American cheese. I know my son and my daughter both love it.
Grow out of that.
We don't really like. I will get like cheddar cheese. It's American cheese. Like they get American cheese, and it like sticks to each other. It's mm-hmm. almost it's like half plastic. I personally it's think gooey. It's super yeah. gross, but maybe it's because I've grown up. Maybe it's just because I'm a cheese snob. I don't know. But
well, if you're a cheese snob, so am I. And American cheese is disgusting.
It's so gross.
Do you remember when right after 9/11, when I don't remember why, but France did something that Americans didn't like, and everybody started calling French fries freedom fries.
I don't remember that.
Oh, it was a whole thing. Like they changed the name of the French fries on the menus at like the Pentagon cafeteria and stuff. Instead of saying French fries, they said freedom fries. And then somebody put out a press release, and they were like, you know, as revenge for calling Belgian fries freedom fries, the French are going to continue to call American cheese American cheese. I was like, yeah, we deserve it. American cheese is the worst.
Yeah. One of my favorite lines was here. Oh, you can't just haul him out whenever, like a grief jack in the box. I was like, yeah. that's fair. That's actually a yeah. really valid
and point. In the dark, sitting in the yeah. dark like that, that was brutal.
And so when and then And this is what I was talking about earlier when Carrie rescinds the offer of talking to her father, to Jen talking to her father, like where I think I mentioned it last week, like holding her dad hostage, basically. And that's what happened. And then that it, and I can appreciate Jen's, her vitriol at that. Like, don't get me wrong, you throw your dinner at her. It's just the disgusting plop that it makes on the floor. And basically, both of them walked out of that room losers. Like, no one won that. There was no like, oh, well, I rescind it. Oh, man, that's, it made me, it made me like, oh, Carrie, like, I get why, but that's cold. Like, that is cold.
It's a low blow, right? Because it's like a real personal soft spot for Jen is her father, obviously.
Yeah.
But I did think that weaponizing a cheese slice was like the highest possible use for one of those fucking things.
Right.
Like, yeah, throw it at people. It's much better than trying to eat it.
Yeah.
How do you really feel, Penny?
And so then, so Jen goes to bed, and then she gets up and meets Hannah at the bar to pick up all of her paperwork. And because Hannah is her new best friend, which, like, both people were being so childish. By people, I mean Jen and Carrie were both being so childish that in that interaction. I appreciate that Carrie was reaching out to see how your consultation went. And then, you know, Jen being hurt, all hurt still, like, you know, she threw it back in her face. Yeah. It reminded me of the Andy Jen, like, hey, are you okay? And, oh, are you okay? From last week.
Yeah.
But so then Hannah and Jen decide to, you know what, we're going to fuck all the people who have powers, and we're just going to have a club, and I'm not even going to try anymore. Like, Hannah's like, nope, not going back to the clinic, and fuck it, doesn't matter. why are we doing homework on the weekend? I'm like, I don't know if this is necessarily homework. Again,
I understand her point, though. Like, filling out tons of forms does feel like homework, right?
I get that. Having said that, you're also doing it in order to gain, you know, get your power that you've wanted for however long. Like, you're doing something to better yourself. You haven't been assigned it. You signed up for it. So then they're up on the roof, and, you know, end of the day, and then they're just pegging flyers with the paintball guns. And, of course, Luke shows up.
Yeah.
And she immediately just returns to, oh, what are you doing? Oh, can I come? I was like, Jen, oh my God, you are, you are so, I don't know if codependent's the right word, because you're not even really in a codependent relationship. You're just being pitiful.
Yeah. She's throwing herself at him constantly, and he says the meanest things. And this time it was, oh, you're so funny, Jen.
You're so funny, Jen. Ugh.
Like, the idea of her going to some trendy bar with him was, like, hilarious.
Yeah. And so then Hannah's like, what the fuck was that? And she's like, oh, that's actually better than it normally goes, which makes it even more sad. so then they're like, oh, you know what? You know what we're going to do? We're going to go back to the clinic, and we're going to fuck it up. So they stop, apparently stop by the store on the way there and grab their masks and go through and they go in. An alarm's going off. Oh, and then it just stops. All right, cool. Start smashing shit. And then they starts peeing on the desk. And then the security, or then Hannah starts, it's like, oh, my God, I just disappeared. I'm like, oh, what? And then she just reappears and then disappears and reappears and trying to get control of her power. And, oh, my God, this is so fucking cool. And he's like, great. I guess there goes our club. Oh, no, Jen, I'm not going anywhere. Hey, what are you two doing? Whoa! And bye-bye, Hannah. I thought that was well done. Yeah, a little bit telegraphed, but yes, I thought it was well done. Although that had to be like the worst security guard in the world, because he wasn't that far behind her and she was in heels, and I don't understand how, and probably drunk. I'm not sure how he didn't catch her, but
yeah, maybe he just was content to chase her away, but maybe he didn't realize that she had peed on the desk.
The pee on the desk was pretty good. I mean, pretty gross, but also pretty good.
It's not something I ever would have done. But
yeah, like I don't think I've ever actually had the urge to pee on something that someone else held valuable because it was out of spite. But I'm sure that I've felt spiteful towards people in other ways.
I wanted to mention the actor who plays Hannah. Her name is Patricia Allison, and she is one of the main characters on the Netflix show Sex Education. Mm. And that is a show with a sense of humor that if you like this show, I think you would like that show. It's not exactly the same, but it has a similar sort of irreverence and unexpectedness to it.
I think we talked about that
really good
early on in this podcast.
This show reminded me of it in the first episode, just something about the sense of humor, and then to have this character, this actor show up, I was like, hey, I know her, like she's from Sex Ed and she's hilarious, so I was like ready to be entertained by her.
When some of the content backs off a little bit, maybe I'll go back and check that out.
Yeah, it's hard. There's never enough time to watch all the good stuff that's on TV.
Yeah, absolutely. So then we flash to so Jen is at home and Jizz Lord is comforting her as one does as a cat. And this interchange was probably my favorite in the entire show. Here, I brought you some tea. apparently, it makes everything better, according to TV. Which, in most British shows, yep, that's basically, I'll have a cuppa. So what's going on? Well, she hates me. I'm just not going to talk to her. I'm going to shun her and never talk to her again. Okay. No, not like that. I mean, are you going to be friends again? Oh, yeah, probably. Wait, so you want to be friends with her and she wants to be friends with you. I hope so. Maybe I don't understand what simple is. And then she, I did forget the painkillers in the tea. Oh, it seems too simple. So it tastes funny. I put a bunch of painkillers in it. Oh, I'm going to leave that there. And then he just leans his head on her shoulder like a cat, and I was just like, aw.
That's what Pixel does for me when I'm having a bad day. He snuggles me, and then as soon as I let down my guard, he claws me.
there it is. and then we get to, so she comes out and Carrie's doing the erotic jigsaw that Jen offered in peace. Jen made the first move, offered the EJ, and then Carrie went to, made the comment to include her in asking about the man or woman nipple. Well, it's got a hair on it. It's a man's. I can never
not
tell.
Always.
not always. trust me. And so everything is all is well in the world again. And so then they're going to, then they go back to the clinic and she's filling out all her paperwork and all that. And, she's like, how am I supposed to know what blood type I am? And it's like, oh, that sounds like a Jen line.
Yeah. Seriously. And of course, Carrie knew.
Yeah, of course, Carrie knew. And AB positive. And you're O negative? Not even close. But I appreciate the effort. Well, it's going to be a two-way street from here on out. Any problems that you have? And then we'll get into Carrie's storyline here in a minute. But and then the does it smell like piss in here tag was pretty good.
Yeah. Can you imagine like coming into your office in the morning and somebody has like peed on your desk? I don't know how you like work that day.
I mean, like. That somebody had to come in and clean up all the smashed plants and all that. So,
yeah,
like I imagine that some work was done, but that is an awful thing.
It would feel incredibly threatening and personal.
Right.
Interesting. But yeah.
All right. So any notes for Jen's? Jen's storyline?
Jen's story. So, when Jen and Hannah were together at one point in the bathroom, they were talking about how it felt like there was a giant club and they were left out of it. And it made me remember what it felt like when I was a teenager and had not yet started having sex. And it seemed to me like everyone else was having sex. And I was just like this loser who was, you know, never going to figure out what it was all about. And I felt like I was left out of a giant club. Yeah, it was the same feeling. I was like, oh, I know that feeling. And how it feels when you meet another person that you can share that with is pretty special until you lose them. I also thought it was really funny. The classic drunk girl in the bathroom thing, you're so pretty. Oh, that's so sweet. You're so pretty. And then the line about, I think you're the Princess Diana of our generation. And Jen's
I've been waiting for someone to say that. I was like, I think you are the Princess Diana of our generation. I've been waiting for someone to tell me that all my life. It's like,
yeah. I mean, it's patently ridiculous. But I also was trying to think of like what would be the sort of American
version of that. Yeah.
And I mean, at a certain point many decades ago, it would have been like Jackie Kennedy, right? Or I guess in a way, Michelle Obama is like that.
Yeah, she's I could see a Michelle
a hero
Obama,
to
yeah.
a lot of women.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I guess she was around for a very, very long time, and she had a very distinct personality. So, I mean, yeah, I don't know that her popularity wasn't as widespread as, like, Princess Di.
Yeah. Princess Diana is a really unique figure in our society, our history. She's, like, the one person that even people like me who think the royals are stupid I still love Princess Di.
Very tragic figure. I mean, very tragic in what she went through. Not that this is a Princess Diana podcast, but she went through some really crappy stuff but she was well loved by all. So I'm sorry, Jen, you are not Carrie. Carrie is the Princess Diana of our generation.
Yeah, Carrie very well may be the Princess Diana of their generation, but Jen is not the type who would campaign against landmines and befriend AIDS patients when no one else would. That's just not Jen. But I was wondering, like, what do drunk dudes talk about in the bathroom, if anything?
Well, first off, drunk dudes
don't... Like, you don't tell each other they're pretty, right?
We don't talk to each other in the bathroom, or if we do, it's like, hey, what's up? Like, that's basically the extent, like, unless you have two people who know each other and like they happen to be going to the bathroom at the same time and they happen to be, you know, standing at different urinals, you don't typically go to the bathroom together unless you honest to God have to go to the bathroom at it just what happens to be the same. We don't wait for each. Oh, I've got to go to the bathroom. Oh, I'll go too. Okay, thank God we can go dish together in the bathroom. That doesn't happen, or at least doesn't happen to me. It doesn't happen in my circles. or it hasn't happened.
It was a very real moment that I have experienced many times in my 20s of like being in some bar bathroom, and usually it's not even someone you know. You just end up striking a conversation with another woman in the bathroom and you're like, oh my God, I really love your lipstick. And she's like, really? Because your hair is so pretty. And like, it's just drunk girls who are, they just, you know, that's what we do.
That's one of the, so sidebar here, but like perhaps girls can go into a bathroom and compliment each other on whatever and then strike up a conversation. If you don't know another, as a man, if you don't know another man, you might be able to strike up a conversation about a football game that is on or whatever. But it's got to be something happening at the moment. It's got to be, it's typically something like, I would never go to be like, oh, dude, where'd you get those Italian looking shoes? Nope. It's not something that I would do.
You guys are missing out, man. It feels good when a stranger tells you you're pretty.
Like I couldn't go up to a dude and be like, hey, you guys look like you're having fun. I want to hang out with you guys. No, they'd be like, fuck off, creep. And you know, it's just like, or all right.
A dude said that to me one time in a bar. He came up to our, he had hit on me already like two or three times that night. And then he just came up to the table where I was with all my friends, and he was like, you guys are having the most fun of anybody in the bar. I want to hang out with you guys.
Did he hang out with you?
And we were like, all right. He was like 25 and I was 45. I was like, you got to stop. And my friends who were with me were very, very entertained by the whole situation. They still bring it up whenever we talk about that restaurant. They're like, oh, maybe the guy's still there.
But yeah,
it was flattering.
To answer your question, no, I have not really experienced much of, like, you know, secret sharing in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. I save that for therapy.
Yeah. You guys are men are missing out. Missing out.
Do you have any other notes?
I'm just wondering if I have any other notes about Hannah. Oh, she calls Luke a fly boy, which I thought was really funny.
Although I forgot to mention that Hannah is then teleporting onto Luke's lap on TikTok,
so harsh.
Or yeah, TikTok or YouTube or whatever. I was like, man, that is hard.
That was like the ultimate sort of fuck you. I mean, I don't know if she knew what Luke meant to Jen, but she knew it was something.
Yeah. That made me dislike Hannah immediately. Like, hey, I get where you're coming from. Oh, wait, no. Fuck off.
Yeah. let's talk about fucking Cash.
Okay.
And his whole thing.
All right. I will let you lead the Cash parade, and I will and I'll add in seasoning as necessary.
Yeah. So Cash continues to be a giant tool. You know, he is cute. And, you know, I really felt for Carrie when she was like, I really miss my boyfriend. He's fun and he's sexy. And when she describes him, she's like, he has lustrous, shining hair. And I don't remember the second thing. And then she goes, and rippling emotional maturity. And I was like, oh, no, he doesn't. He really doesn't. But and then she was so excited later when she thought he had like atoned for his embarrassment, and she was like, we can move on to adult things like going on a mini break for the weekend. And it's like her requests from him are so reasonable and so, like, you know, just, I don't know how else to say reasonable, just like she's not asking for too much from him, and he just fails constantly.
And
always takes her for granted. You know, she sends him out on his forgiveness tour, and it takes like 5 minutes with Seb, not even, before he is off on a tangent and they're making t-shirts for a lad's farewell tour, which I assumed was sort of like a roving bachelor party concept.
Right.
Right, like
I think so, yeah.
Your last single night or something like that. I did think the t-shirts looked pretty cool, and I was like, they should sell those. I would buy one. Also, I didn't realize Seb's name was Seb. I had to look it up several times. I keep calling him Marlin. I think because Marlin is a kind of fish. I thought it was absolutely ridiculous that Seb didn't know that dolphins are mammals and not fish.
Well, so he said he could summon sea creatures. So yeah. I like mammals, even in, you know, dolphins would fall into that regardless of whether
they're
fish.
But maybe he should have said fish. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
So that makes me wonder, like, can he summon mollusks? Like, what about sea sponges or, you know, coral reefs? It's hard to, there's a lot of stuff in the ocean that's not fish.
Right.
I was glad to see Ade again just because he's so cute and sweet and kind. And the fact that he's a massage therapist, like, of course he is. Like, he has the perfect personality for that. And he has giant hands. I was like, oh, I would totally go to him for a massage. Like, he seems like he'd be so good. And then he's like, oh, you know, that's what a leader does. He takes responsibility. And I think you would be good if we just gave it a second chance and we'd be fabulous or whatever. And you know, the joy on Cash's face as he realizes that, you know, he can start, that the band wants to get back together and that he can, you know, give into this ridiculous idea of being a vigilante. And he says, I'd come back older and wiser, rising from the ashes like a phoenix. I'm not depressed. I'm in the middle of a redemption arc. First of all, older and wiser, it's been like 2 days.
Like I put down you're 3 days older and wiser.
Yeah, you ass. It wasn't ashes that you fell into. It was a pit of humiliation. And I don't think phoenixes rise out of pits of humiliation. But the line, I'm not depressed, I'm in the middle of a redemption arc, is so fucking funny. I want to write it on a t-shirt. I want to put it up on my wall. It killed me. I was like, God, that's so good. And then he says, this isn't a lad's farewell tour. This is an assembling. We're in the middle of an assembling. And I couldn't help but get a little excited about that because the assembling montages in movies are one of my most favorite things. Like, I love, like, in Blues Brothers when they're getting the band back together and, like, when, you know, in heist movies when they're like, we're gonna need a team of 10 people. I know a guy for safecracking. And then they're, like, off to get the team together. I love a good assembling. So I was like, oh, it's an assembling. But then I was like, oh, they have such shitty choices to assemble from. So, of course, they end up at Gregor's house. And Gregor is, you know, the only person on earth I dislike more than Cash.
I just want to interject. So they said, so Ade said, we just had a bit of bad luck. No, you had bad luck. And a bad plan to jump out from under a bridge at women to ask if they want help. And you had bad execution in not backing up Ade when he was going. Like, nothing that you guys did was positive.
I would not call that bad luck. They caused all their own problems.
Yeah, like that you insulted a man's girlfriend and he punched you. That's not bad luck.
That's stupidity.
Being a dick. Yeah. That's idiocy. like that when Cash, you know, sheds his depressive manner, and maybe it's been as much as a week, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But when Cash sheds his depressive manner and he's just like, "Oh my God, like this should be a like awe-inspiring like, oh man, he's finally coming out of it." Yes. And it just fell flat. And maybe it's intentional. Maybe he's a narcissist. But like the hope and confidence that he had, it's not inspiring. It's super cringy.
It's sad.
And it made me go, oh God, you don't get it yet. You just don't get it. This is an assembling. Yeah, an assembling of still creeps. You guys
like
are
you're still a group of losers. Gregor sucks, but he was right. Like, you're not a group of band of brothers. You're a band of losers.
Yeah, Cash, if you really want to do somebody a favor, get together with Ade and help people get into their houses by having him stick his arm through the door. Like, that's the key. And what Ade said with regard to, you're taking responsibility. That's what a leader does. No. What a leader does is figures out a way to overcome the either the differences or the difficulties or whatever the case is. Not, oh, I'm a fuck up. Jen did that last episode and she wasn't a leader. She was just a fuck up. Like she's, that was just a way to make someone feel sorry for you. And Ade, I'm sorry, but you're falling for it. And yes, he's a fucking loser. And if you want to go, you know, if you want to go, you know, join some other vigilante group that people that aren't douches, great. But don't waste yourself on Cash because
I mean, God. And the amount that he takes Carrie for granted is so monumental. I don't normally root for couples to break up, but I just really want her to dump his ass. She deserves so much better, and he's dragging her down even more than Jen. Yep. I think, because Jen does actually support Carrie sometimes. She does come through, and they do have fun together. Whereas Cash just like uses her for rent and lies to her all the time, and like he doesn't even have sex with her when she wants to have sex. Like, what the fuck, man? You're a 25-year-old guy. You're supposed to be like. That's the one thing that 25-year-old guys are good for, is that they always want to have sex.
Fact.
Sorry, as that was former, rude. No, I'm sorry.
As a former 25-year-old guy, I concur.
Yeah.
That is the one thing you can rely on us for, is we want to have sex.
I did think his move of putting the air fryer in the bed was pretty clever, you know, so he didn't have to get up and go to the kitchen to make hash browns.
So that absolutely made me think of the Michael Scott... I put the George Foreman grill at the floor so that I can just cook the bacon and wake up to the smell of you know, crackling bacon.
I didn't remember that from The Office. That's funny.
Yeah, that was. I was like, oh, it's like Michael Scott. It's like the George Foreman grill that he stepped on. I mean, I can appreciate the thought process, but the fact that Carrie was like, "What is that? What is what?" Did you bring the air fryer to bed? So I don't have to go to the kitchen to make hash browns. I appreciate your ingenuity, but just get up and go to the kitchen, man. Come on.
I mean, it's a fire hazard. There's so many reasons that that's a bad idea. But I can understand the impulse to be like, what do I need so I can just stay under the covers all day? Like, I've had some experience with pretty bad depression, and there are definitely have been times where just like crossing the room seemed like just too much effort. So I can kind of understand like retreating to bed with a source of food, probably not an air fryer.
I am almost positive that I have been through a bout of depression. You know, it is rough. And if you are going through that, let me go ahead and just make my PSA. Go ahead and seek help. Talk to someone. Get professional help. There are people who are there to help you. And, you know, suicide is a huge deal in the country. And if you need help, there is a suicide hotline. I don't have it for you off the top of my head, but...
we can link it in the show notes. Yeah, I think it's 9... It's either 998 or 988.
Yeah, we'll link it in the show notes. But if you're suffering by, don't get me wrong, like, please get help. Period. Stop listening to the podcast and go.
Unless it's helping.
Unless if it's helping, then you know, keep going. Hopefully, we'll continue to help cheer you up. As soon as the podcast is over, though, you know, call the hotline. So it's a very real thing. But I personally have gone through bouts of depression, and, I'm the opposite. I am the, just give me something else to do. I am not the I can lay in bed all day, and maybe I wasn't actually going through depression. I think that I absolutely was, but maybe I just adapted it to my own personal routine, and it was, hey, you know, distract myself with anything else that I can be doing. Get up and play video games or watch movies or cook or eat or whatever.
It looks different on different people. No two people are going to be depressed the exact same way. And so you should never feel bad about how it manifests for you.
Yeah. So just for me in general, like, that's why I am like, I personally am like, oh, just get up and go to the kitchen, man. Like, maybe you'll feel better because you actually got up and fucking did something. Don't get me wrong. You're worthless regardless, but you know, have sex with your girlfriend. Like, give her one. You know, let her feel a win, because she is not there. Anyway, all right.
Cash is hard to defend, because he is a selfish weenie and he makes all of his own problems. But if I do have sympathy for anybody who's going through that kind of depression, though, because you can't really control yourself, and being told to just cheer up or just do something is it's kind of mean.
That's definitely a difficult thing.
But I don't know if Cash's mental health situation really is, or if he's just a lazy, self-entitled douche.
Yeah, you were humiliated. That's what happened. Is you're not in a depression. Yeah. You were humiliated by your own personal actions, and that's what happened. Anyway, moving on.
Cash and the boys get back together. Now, with the scene where they go to Gregor's house, first of all, I loved when he was like, wait, why do you have your suit on? And then the whole thing that happened after that, where they go in and they meet the other people that are in Cash's like new vigilante group, which was Magnet Girl, PDF guy, which, like, I would not want that guy in my home. Right. And I don't know who the third person was.
Laser Eyes. Laser Eyes. Like
Laser
the,
Eyes. Yeah, the right. Cat, now Laser I remember. Eyes. Yep. Laser Eyes. And then when it took, like, Cash a few minutes to remember that he had a power, like, he was, like, letting Gregor make a fool out of him. And then the joy on his face when he realized that he could get the drop on him by just reversing time. I'm like, Cash, did you forget that you have this incredibly powerful power? Like, you should never be in a situation where somebody, like, embarrasses you, because you can always rewind it and then... But he's, like, dumb, right? I did enjoy, though, when he rewound time and he punched Gregor in the face, and then he says he will have deserved it.
Yeah, that was actually a really good line.
Okay, Cash, that's funny. He has good lines. He's a funny character. I just wouldn't want him to be in my life for real. Gregor is the only person, I think, who's more annoying than Cash. So anytime Gregor gets punched in the face, that's also a good thing.
Oh, that was totally worth it. Yeah.
Yeah. I am pro that. But then when Cash goes home and tells Carrie his, you know, good news, and she's so, like, obviously distressed by it, it really made me sad.
Yeah, it was definitely a you know, if you like Cash and you identify with Cash, it is a positive. And then maybe it's giving you the understanding that someone else may be ill affected by your narcissism or your commitment to someone else. It was definitely a hard scene to watch. And it's the whole concept that, you know, oh, none of this would have happened if it weren't for you, babe. Mm-hmm. And the understanding in Carrie's eyes, it was just heartbreaking.
Yeah. I mean, she has been enabling him for a long time.
Very true. It is because of her, but...
Yeah.
I mean, she has a lot of qualities that make her, we'll just say, better than Cash.
I can't agree with that more. I think she is going through some important growth. And, you know, last week we saw her, you know, stand up for herself for maybe the first time ever against Jen, you know, her closest friend. And it must have hurt her a lot to do that. But it's like it's opened up this side of her where she sees people in a new way. And she's looking at Cash and she's like, I don't think I can keep doing this.
And good for you. You shouldn't have to.
Yeah. Like, he sucks. You're right. And you need to get out of it. Even if Cash has all the potential in the world to someday be the best person for you, you can't be with him now. He sucks.
And he's maybe you should find him when he is that person.
Yeah. You've given him enough leeway to become somebody better than who he is, and he hasn't done it yet. I know it's hard, though, because she does care about him. It's just, he sucks.
Yeah.
That's, I think, all I had about Cash.
Okay. Well, if I think of something else that I, you know, semi-nice that I want to say about Cash, I will think of it in the future. But I don't have anything else nice to say about him right now. So let's move on to saving the best for last. So the Carrie Jizzlord storyline. All right. So these two together had as much chemistry as Jin and Carrie do.
Yeah.
Jizzlord and like Luke Rawlinson and Sophia Oxenham are doing an amazing job, especially, you know, discussing things. Like, they've got separate lines, and they're both literally talking about completely different topics, but they mesh. And yeah. And maybe
well,
they're
both such kind people.
Right.
That, like, Carrie's the only person who actually answers his questions. Like,
absolutely.
So respectful.
I really liked the Y game. With Jizzlord mm-hmm. and Carrie.
It's
like this. Why? Because she's a selfish person. Why? Because, you know, blah, 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 blah. Why? I thought that it was good. It ended up with a button of why? Because I'm not a therapist. Why? Because I didn't need the A-levels. It was almost like an exposition of what was going on and what was going through people's heads. But it was explaining it to a child, and yeah. I thought that was a really, really clever way of giving some input into the story and kind of some background and saying what Carrie's thinking without saying what Carrie's thinking. Yeah. Like, oh, this is how I'm feeling. Why? Ugh, because of this. And she was so patient with it. It was great.
Yeah. And when he tried to cheer her up by making her a new erotic jigsaw puzzle, and it was inexplicably just a drawing of a dog with a hat, I
don't know what an erotic is, and I'm not sure I know what a jigsaw puzzle is.
And she's just like, aww, and like smiles and like pats him. Like, the two of them seem like they should spend more time together. Like, they're just both like sweetie pies.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time that Jin's really yeah. left Jizzlord by himself. Oh, meaning, right.
Like, she saw that Tupperware full of blood and didn't think to say, like, don't do anything else until I can help you with this. Like,
the Tupperware full of blood, the spitting into the envelope. Like, he's just spitting into an envelope and she's just having a conversation.
Yeah. Just, God. But Luke Rawlinson continues to just charm me. I find him very charming. a lot of people wearing really ugly clothes this week.
It must have been laundry day. It must yeah. have been laundry day.
Jen's worn that that top before that just looks like, I don't, it's like a quilting bee clown tent. I don't know what the hell she's wearing. It's so ugly. Jizzlord is always in really random stuff. I think he's just like wearing like whatever he can find in Jen's like sort of discarded clothes pile. He was right. wearing like purple leggings today. I was like, okay. but Jen and Hannah both had like really wackadoo outfits on.
Yeah, the so they do find those erotic jigsaw puzzles under Jen's bed?
Yeah, under Jen's bed.
Yeah, under Jen's bed. And we used to do these together. We stay up all night and we, you know, and I had such a, I have a very precise method
yeah,
for doing jigsaws. And Jen is just chaos. Yeah. It was so much fun. And it was, I mean, like the joy in her voice and her face, like you could see a friend doing that or saying that.
Yeah. And it's what we talked about last week too, that even though Jen is can be selfish and a drama queen, she brings something to Carrie's life that Carrie can't give herself, right? Carrie is very buttoned up, and Jen loosens her up and takes her on adventures and, you know, brings out her silly side. And it's a valuable balance to Carrie as a person. They just need to rejigger the balances between them in all the other ways.
Absolutely. You know?
Jen is still fun. She says to Luke, "Oh, I'm so crazy. What will I do next?" And I was like, yeah, that's her whole persona.
and then we have the, like, that's pretty much the only scene we really have with Carrie and Jizzlord. And then, you know, obviously Carrie drops in to, you know, to drop the grief jack in the box on Jen. And then the, you talk about depression, like that's Carrie just wrapped up in the blanket. Nothing that you can see, can't see anything but her face. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she hears the knock of the door and she goes, and she sees the jigsaw. I did really enjoy the line, the interaction, like, oh, we're going to do a jigsaw. Jizzlord and I, my best new best friend, is going to do the an erotic jigsaw, an EJ. And yeah, whole hog, which of course a hog is another word for dick. So
oh, is it? Like, that's funny.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you want to see my hog? Yeah, no, that's also gross. Motorcycle, but yeah. I thought whole hog was an interesting choice of words. And then so, hey, we're going to do this together. No, you can't. That's mine. Oh, no, I'm pretty sure I bought. No, I did, because the bank called me to ask if I wanted to spend £200 on erotic jigsaws. And I said yes.
And then they reduced
my overdraft limit. I was like, that's pretty funny.
I was like, oh, that's a smart bank.
Yeah, it's well played, sirs. Well played. And then Carrie, you know, we already talked about Carrie and Cash, and then Carrie at the end with Jen at the shop, or I say at the shop, at the clinic.
Oh God. So when Jen says to Carrie, like, you know, tell me your problem, burden me with your problems. And then Carrie's like, oh, I'm fine. Really? I can't think of anything. Well, there is this one thing. And then her body language changes. She looks straight ahead and her voice drops. And she's like, Cash is back with his vigilante group and I hate it. And I think it's going to ruin our relationship. And then she sort of realizes what she said and she turns back into the other Carrie. Like, she flips the switch and she's like, but really, I'm fine. It's no problem. And I'm like, okay, that was a moment, Carrie. You're starting to grow.
Like, but other than that, I'm fine.
Yeah. And Jen's like, I don't know how to respond to that. It's a tricky thing when a friend of yours has a significant other who sucks. Because if you are honest with them about the way that person sucks, and they decide to stay with that person, you can lose them as a friend. And they'll resent you, even if they know you're right about the person, they'll resent you for saying it to them.
Yep.
It's very rare that it doesn't end in disaster to tell someone how you feel about their, you know, boyfriend, partner, whatever.
I had a lesson learned there. You know, I came into an area of work and some guys were just there and hanging out and like, oh, why is everybody all, oh, you know, this girl broke up with me. And my response was, oh, good. She's a C next Tuesday. You're better off without her. Mm-hmm. And then everybody else just stared at me like kind of in shock that I said it. And and then I go, oh, you're not trying to get back together with you, are you? With her, are you? And she's like, he's like, yeah. And I was like, all right, well, good luck, man. Like, turned around and walked away. It's like, my bad. I mean, we're still friends. It didn't end too early. He's not, you know, not married to her, and she's married. He's married to a wonderful girl, and that's fantastic. But yeah, I basically stay out of other people's business when it comes to their crappy significant others.
Yeah. I mean, it just my personal opinion.
Yeah.
I one time told a friend of mine that I didn't think she should marry the guy she was going to marry. And she went ahead and married him anyway. And I feel like all of my predictions came true. And it's like, it's so hard not to be like, remember when I told you? Like, I just...
Yeah, no one wants to hear I told you so. As a person who hears I told you so on a regular basis.
Yeah, you don't want
to
hear
it. No one wants to you don't want to hear it. Like, believe me, I blame myself. I know it was my choice. But, you know what you're here for? You're here for support. Support me, by God. Well, I don't want to listen to you bitching about the things I told you were going to go wrong. So, you know, it's okay. It's, you know what? I'll bitch to somebody else. That's not, this is not obviously directed at you, but just in general.
Yeah. I've been in that situation where like I gave somebody advice. They didn't follow my advice. And then they came back to complain to me about what happened. And I'm like, I don't know why you're talking to me about it. You don't do what I tell you to do. And then,
right.
Like, and then the thing happened and like, now you want me to help you clean it up? Which actually basically was my entire job as a lawyer, and I got real tired of doing that too. Like, oh, you made a big disaster when you did the thing I told you not to do? Great. Just leave it here on my desk. Yeah. I got real tired of it after a while. I was like,
I think that's a reasonable statement.
Yeah. If you're not going to listen to me, I don't want to give you any more advice. Unfortunately, I got paid to give advice, so I had to keep doing it. But I don't know what Jen should do with Carrie talking to her about cash. I guess just be there for her and ask a lot of questions about how Carrie is feeling and what she thinks she wants to do, and don't actually give any advice. That would be my advice for a friend in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, Cash is such a freeloader that Jen's got to see it. And, I mean, he also
We know she sees
out...
it because she said it to
Gizlord,
and he repeated it, called him a feckless loser. Yeah. But I don't think she can say that to Carrie. I think she needs to say things to Carrie like, well, what do you think you should do about it? And how will that turn out? And you just sort of like... Let
do you
the
feel
person
like he
talk?
He values you and
yeah
yeah and maybe that's too direct but yeah. I am
it
not
sounds
the...
like you think he takes you for granted like yeah
which he does oh yeah. My God Gary he does yeah I would not be a great friend of Carrie. I would very much be saying how much Cash sucks
and Cash would be like he's just trying to sleep with you
yeah. That's I mean. I guess I wouldn't mind because she's awesome, but yeah.
Yeah.
Also, you're a douche. Anyway. All right. So, any other notes?
We saw a couple new powers this week. They weren't that exciting. There was the hair-changing girl, and there was another guy who was, like, clinging to a wall like Spider-Man while he was painting graffiti.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was kind of cool, but... And then there was, at the very beginning, there was somebody spinning in the air like he, I couldn't tell if he was having fun or couldn't figure out how to land.
Was just stuck, yeah.
Yeah.
there was also a girl sitting on a lamppost.
Oh, I missed that.
There, yeah, the new powers that I got were lamppost girl, flyers, and hair girl. Those are the only ones that I got.
And Denise apparently has some kind of telekinesis because she was using it to file her nails.
Oh, I didn't see that. I didn't notice that.
I was like, you have to pay attention when you're filing your nails. The idea of it being like, you could just like put it on autopilot is you're going to hurt yourself actually. But anyway, I should stop trying to inject real world physics into this incredibly silly show.
Perhaps she's done it so often that, you know, she's like, I can tie my shoes and not even think about it. Like if she does that on a regular basis and it's been, you know, a number of years, 10, then okay, sure. I am missing some of the world building, like some of the history. I wish we got some of the, like the kind of like when we talk about like the 9 days after the apocalypse happens.
Yeah.
I do wish like we could get some more stories about that.
Yeah, or maybe I'm kind even of a hoping, flashback. Yeah, for a flashback for like, because it seems like this has only been a reality in this world for 10 years. So when it started happening, it must have been chaos.
Chaos. Absolutely chaos. Absolutely.
I would really like to see some flashbacks. Maybe Ange will give us a flashback and we'll get to see what she looked like before she became eternally 12 years old.
Yeah, that'd be pretty hot. Not hot, but you know, I mean, that'd be pretty good. all right. Do we have anything else? All right. In that case, time for a break. Stay with us. More to come.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
And we're back and moving on to extraordinary news. Penny?
First off, I checked out how we're doing on Rotten Tomatoes, and Extraordinary has a 100% on the tomato meter and Sweet. A 91% with audiences. So we are not the only people who are loving this show. I'm very happy about that because I know they've already started filming season two, and I want there to be like 15 seasons of this show. I love it so much. there wasn't a lot of news, but I did find a nice lengthy interview with Luke Rollison on comedy.co.uk and pulled out some excerpts. It's a longer interview, so we can link it in the show notes so people can read the whole thing. There was some really great photography that accompanied this interview as well, just like last week. So I recommend I can only checking imagine. It out, as well as Luke Rollison's Instagram.
I went and looked at the 1883 article, and mm-hmm. I see what you mean about Sophia Hoxnam's like photography. Like it was gorgeous. Very classy and beautiful.
Yeah, like just none of the Carrie dorkiness at all. It was really like, oh wow, how does she do that? It's amazing. All right, so I'm gonna ask the questions, and Greg is gonna pretend to be Luke Rollison.
Excellent.
Your character is, without giving too much away, quite unique, requiring a particular level of physicality.
Yeah, because I have a background in clown, there was this rumor spread around set that I was a trained circus performer. This could not be further from the truth. I did go to clown school, but it involves absolutely zero physical skill training. But every time I had to go through anything remotely physically challenging, the stunt coordinator always prefaced instructions with like, "Now, I know you're used to backflipping off trapezes, but no matter what I said, I could not dispel the idea that I'm capable of backflips. I'm also terrified of heights. But weirdly, even though I don't consider myself to have an acting background, the stupid stuff I've been doing for the last 5 years ended up being unnervingly relevant. This is probably the only role absolutely ideal for someone who performed a one-man nature documentary for 3 years and then toured a physical theater show dressed as a dancing sperm. So, if you want to get cast in a Disney Plus show, that's all you have to do."
Gislord also goes on a bit of an emotional journey.
It's a strange role to play because when we meet Gislord, he doesn't know anything about his past or who he is. He's a blank slate. On one hand, that throws all the preparation we often associate with acting straight out of the window. I found that a bit of a relief. I knew as much about the character as he knew about himself. So much of clowning is about responding live to a situation and the thrill of taking whatever's thrown at you when you're performing. For my performing background, then, it was a dream role to play, where the emotional journey can never come from the preparation you've done as an actor, but solely from the situations you find yourself in. It's my first major role in a show, so in many ways, I was just as clueless as the character is, and that was helpful.
This is your first major TV acting role. How did you find the filming process?
I've never enjoyed being paid to do something more. Often in comedy, the stuff that pays is the stuff you endure in order to perform your beloved show for free. I feel so spoiled. The best thing about making the show was the cast, especially the other leads, Mairéad Tyers, Bilal Hazna, and Sophia Oxenham. For all of us, it was our first big job, so you're going to go on this huge adventure together. Being on set for a show like Extraordinary is absolutely absurd. One moment you're taking a dog to a strip club, the next you're dodging flying trout because the character has the power to summon sea creatures, but not the power to control them. I refuse to give any context.
You've been starring in online sketches and performing live shows for a while. Was the plan always to become a TV actor too, or has that happened accidentally? How did you get cast in Extraordinary?
I was drawn to performing comedy because it felt the easiest medium to find an audience for stupid things I wanted to make. I would have been just as happy being a filmmaker or a director or an artist, except I'd be bad at all those things. But only in live comedy can you think, what if I had a lamp on my head in the dark and went, nang, 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 and then that evening, 30 people in a basement have to watch you do that. I'm obsessed by the immediacy of that. I've always wanted to be a performer. But when I first moved to London trying to be an actor, I felt a lot less creatively fulfilling than the nang, nang, nang stuff. And weirdly, that stuff was a lot more successful in terms of professional development, too. It brought my work to the kind of venues that attracted industry attention, and that's how I got an agent. I feel very lucky to have not been fired by my agents before I was cast in the show. I think the nang, nang, nang thing was beginning to look pretty commercially unviable. There's things I've always loved about making things for screen, especially when it comes to creating visual worlds which you could never portray on stage. For me, whatever the medium is, it just comes down to getting an idea out of your head and out into the world.
In terms of the live circuit, how do you describe your style of performance? Clowning? It's not stand-up. You're in a bit of a niche.
I tend to avoid calling myself a clown, which is a wild claim when my Instagram handle is Luke Rollison is a clown. but it does make me cringe when MCs announce, next up, we have some clowning, mostly because that mirrors how the rest of the audience reacts when they hear that. Privately, I absolutely think of myself as a clown, but for branding purposes, I tend to refer to myself as a physical comedian or a trained bush baby. My main aim is to be the most memorable act someone sees at a gig. Not the best, not the funniest, or the most accomplished, but the most memorable. Even when it's a total train wreck, I know there's no way any audience member is going home and isn't going to mention the guy who performed a silent parody of Ghost as a mime orgy. I had an entire row walk out of that bit in Buxton. That's how bloody clean they were to go home and tell their spouses about it.
What are your plans for 2023? Will you be back at the Fringe? Oh, I should interject. Fringe is, they're referring to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival that takes place every summer in Scotland, in Edinburgh. And fringe festivals happen all over the world, and therefore experimental or, you know, fringy art and performances. A lot of comedians, you know, start one-person shows at fringe festivals. There's a lot of, you know, apparently dancing sperms. I don't know what else he does there. So, yeah, the question is, will he be back at Fringe?
It's too early to say. We all had such a luxurious run-up time-wise to the 2022 Fringe. I'm not sure if I want to go back to trying to desperately throw a show together in time for August. Making live shows has always been my favorite way of creating, and I love getting to do it. And all I really want is the freedom to make the dumb ideas I want to make, even if they make no sense from a career perspective. I'm obsessed with an old idea that reimagines Bill Gates' rise as a burlesque strip show called Magic Microsoft Excel. There's no way that'll be ready by August 2023. Magic Mike Rissoft. Yeah.
Yeah.
Get it?
I would really like to see that show. That sounds pretty funny. We also have a little bit of listener feedback, and I'll read this first one here. It's from our good friend Tiefen Tebow, and it says, just finished it. Think it must still be Wednesday where you are. I love that series more and more after each episode, partly because it is set in Hackney in North London, where I live too. Oh, I had no idea. That's so cool. Nice. Mostly because it's fucking funny, witty, and very human. I like that the characters are ordinary people with extraordinary powers. Reminds me of X-Men. Not all mutants with powers are super good looking and uphold moral values. And I looked up some of the places that looked familiar to me. The Old King's Head is a real family pub in Shoreditch. The Charrington Wines and Spirit also. And the Moth Bar is a pub in Hackney that has live music and comedy nights. It's now 11:33 or 21:33 p.m. in London. Tottenham is losing again. That's 9:33. Tottenham is losing again in an FA Cup game, and I need to go to bed. Looking forward to the podcast, mates, and a little winky emoji. Thank you, Tiefen.
Yeah, thanks, Tiefen. We appreciate it. It's always awesome to hear your feedback. We also have a voicemail from Mr. Steve Brown, playing that now.
Hello, Greg and Penny. This is Steve, and this is going to be for episode 6 of Extraordinary.
Well, I know I've missed the last couple of episodes, and I'm sorry about that. It just time got away from me. So here we go. Okay, I see that Carrie and Jen are still fighting. Oh, now she's being crummy to Jizzlord. That's not... he's pouring the blood down the sink. This place doesn't have clipboards? Huh. Another person who doesn't have her powers yet. What kind of lame power is that, changing your hair color? Oh, no. She cut the braid off the wrong woman. I don't know how I am with this Cash storyline, but he's just called himself a phoenix and he's in a redemption arc. Come on. Does Jizzlord still change into a cat every once in a while, or does he not have a power at all now? You should at least leave your masks on. I'm sure there's cameras in this place. Oh, and poor Hannah just got her powers. Jizzlord made her suicide tea. Aw, but now he's got his head on her shoulder. At least they're friends again. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve. That was awesome.
It's always good to hear from you. Don't have to apologize for missing a couple of weeks. We are happy to have your input anytime.
Yeah, good point on the clipboard. That was I concur. Clipboard. Not that hard, people.
We have another voicemail from our good friend Jade over at the Murder Magnet podcast.
What is up, Penny and Greg? Okay, I got some thoughts. I'm first of all so excited to see Patricia Allison. Ah, she was truly the best part of Sex Education, and she's so perfect for this role of Jen's like bad influence. I loved it because Jen is usually the bad influence, so she's like even badder and like more selfish and less shameless than Jen. But I felt so bad for Jen when she discovered when Hannah discovered her like teleportation powers and she like disappeared when the security guard came. I was like, oh God, Jen, you're totally getting a taste of your own medicine. But it was really, really sad. And also, like, how did Jen get out of that one? She didn't seem to be in trouble. Like, she just outran the security guard. I mean, I would have been like so afraid to show up at that office after that experience. Yeah. But my favorite moment, though, was when she was pissing on the desk and Hannah was like, why? And she's like, I don't know. Okay, now getting into Cash. Oh, Lord, Cash. Okay, Carrie giving Cash a pep talk makes me want to puke. Like, Carrie, why are we dealing with this emotionally stunted man-child? Like, I thought you were going to stand up for yourself here and, like, learn that he's not for you, but... I don't know. I just can't stand seeing characters on TV like dating people that are so beneath them. It hurts my heart because it's so sadly relatable. I'm like, why is it so easy to criticize her decision and like tell Carrie, you can do better? But it's like so hard to look at my own self in the mirror and actually admit that I'm in a toxic relationship. you know, past experiences. Sorry, too real. But anyway, for some reason, even when Cash apologizes and is like giving out Toblerone, and I still want to punch him in the face. I don't know. I just feel like it's too little too late. Like, I know what they're doing with Cash. We all knew this. They were making him terrible so they could give him a redemption arc. But I just feel like there's still something so piteous about him and like pathetic and self-indulgent that I feel like he's going to have to do a lot to redeem himself in my eyes. Like, his friends were really, really kind and generous to him when they said that, this is what a leader does. You took responsibility. I was like, yeah, I guess, but at like the bare minimum level. And honestly, I don't know. I just kind of check out whenever he talks now. I don't know. Maybe it was the mood I was in when I watched the episode, but I have zero patience for him. However, enjoy him punching Gregor in the face. That was satisfying, because the only character I hate more than Cash is definitely Gregor. Yeah. Okay, now God bless Jizzlord for playing the mediator between Jen and Carrie. He's so sweet and caring, and he's just such a good little cat. I love him so much. And I loved when he was like, oh, I must have the word simple wrong. Oh, man. And probably my favorite part of the whole episode was just Jizzlord's little outfit. He has like royal purple velvety skinny leggings on at one point, a pea soup green t-shirt, and like a yellow and blue striped little old man sweater vest. And I just, for some reason, imagine this is exactly how a house cat would probably dress, like going into their owner's closet and just like kind of snuggling into whatever looks most snuggly. I don't know. It just made me smile so big. And Jizzlord is my favorite, and I want to take him home. And lastly, that song that they played at the end when Carrie and Jen were making up, I looked it up. It's called GMF by John Grant. Never heard it before, but I am so in love. I loved the part where he said, I wonder who they'd get to play me. Maybe they could dig up Richard Burton's corpse. I was like, what is this song? I have got to know. It's really good. You guys should listen to it. Okay, that's all for this week. I can't wait to next episode. I'm so excited, and I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.
Bye, Jade.
Hey, thanks for calling in, Jade.
Yeah, we should link that playlist again this week, because it is a really great playlist. The music is fantastic. Absolutely. It's like so fresh. All the choices they make for music are almost all things I haven't heard before. I remember last week there was one song that I knew, and I was like, I know that one. I'm not the most unhip person in the universe. Like,
yeah, that was awesome, Jade. Thank you so much. Basically, we agree with all of your points. So if you want our podcast down in 4 minutes, that was about good. But that's our show. Thanks for listening, everybody.
If you'd like to get in touch with us or find out more about Podcastica, you can find all of our contact information at podcastica.com.
You can write in or record a voice message right there on podcastica.com, or find links to our social media pages or other shows. Speaking of other shows, I actually just listened to the Apostate, the Star Wars cast of the new, the first episode of the Mandalorian, and I'm not finished yet, but I'm enjoying it. I'm glad to be back in that Star Wars world.
Yeah, me too. I was really excited to see little Grogu again. I have been really into Strange Indeed lately and their coverage of the show You on Netflix. That show is creepy and hilarious and absurd. And Rima and Paik just really crack me up with their discussion. And they always think of things that I didn't think of when I was watching it. It's really fun coverage.
So I watched the seasons 2 and 3 with them, and I started watching this one, and it wasn't that it wasn't for me, but maybe it wasn't for me at that particular point in time, because mm-hmm. I was just like, oh god, Joe, you're so creepy.
Yeah.
Ugh. Like, no, don't, just shut the blinds, man. What are you doing? No, just you keep telling yourself, I'm not gonna pay attention to it. No, just do it. I know it's obsessive, I want to watch the show, but sometimes I just can't handle it.
Yeah, I know that feeling. There, you have to be in the right mental place for some shows, and that's one of them. If you is not your thing, though, there's plenty of other stuff at Podcastica, including The Cast of Us. That show's going to be wrapping up soon, and I'm going to go through serious withdrawal because I love it so much.
We are way hardcore cliffhanger right now, and I can't wait to see what happens this Sunday.
Yeah, it's awesome. So if you like what we do, hit follow, subscribe, rate, review, all that other stuff. It really helps other listeners to find the podcast. Tell a friend, or if you don't like our podcast, tell an enemy.
I'm actually going to say, hey, if you guys don't mind writing reviews, I like hearing how awesome we are, or how not awesome we are and how we can make things better. So while ratings are fantastic, we really appreciate it. And downloads are the thing that help us get out there. Write a review on whatever type of podcast player that you have. I like reading about it. I think it's cool.
Yeah, me too.
But we appreciate all the feedback. Next time on this show, we'll be covering season 1, episode 7, The Merry Monarch. I think it is definitely not too soon to say this. I think you're like the Princess Diana of our generation. Seriously.
Oh my God, I have been waiting my whole life for someone to say that to me.